Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
The upcoming verses are very confidential verses because they're disclosures by Vidura. Confidential things in relation to the personality of Godhead. In yesterday's verse, he described that people in general are unable to understand the Supreme Lord, and they become bewildered, mentioning or indirect reference is Dhritarashtra, who is very bewildered. But even in associating with Dhritarashtra, Vidura did not become bewildered like him. But he didn't become infected by his bad association. Rather, because he was in full shelter of the personality of Godhead, in devotion unto him, he was protected. And because of that spirit, when insulted, he didn't become hurt by the insult. He saw it as an opportunity for further detachment, further attachment to Krishna. So that's the path he followed. And he came to that stage. Abhayam sattva samshuddhihi. And as a result, he could understand Krishna's greatness, and because of understanding Krishna's greatness, he was happy in all circumstances, even undergoing austerity while traveling in a renounced spirit. Whether we're traveling in a renounced spirit or staying in one place, there are austerities and unpleasantries, and to remain peaceful and happy is by finding happiness in relation to Krishna. So now he's going to disclose some confidential things about Krishna. He's going to dive into the glorification of Krishna mood. He's wanting to hear the glories of those in relation to Krishna, the associates of Krishna. But now he wants to directly, personally glorify Krishna. So, he describes Krishna in this way. Despite his being the Lord and being always willing to relieve the distress of sufferers, Krishna refrained from killing the Kurus, although they committed all sorts of sins, and although he saw other kings constantly agitating the earth by their strong military movements carried out under the dictation of three kinds of false pride. I'll read the purport, but Prabhupada is going to explore what does this mean, three kinds of false pride. But more importantly, Krishna came specifically, Pritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Traduskatam. So when the Duskritis did their Duskriti business, why didn't Krishna just immediately finish them? Why? He said he would come to do that. And they did again, and why didn't he act? Purport. As declared in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord appears in the mortal world to execute his much needed mission of killing the miscreants and giving protection to the suffering faithful. In spite of that mission, Lord Krishna tolerated the insult of Draupadi by the Kurus and the injustices perpetrated against the Pandavas, as well as insults against himself. The question may be raised, why did he tolerate such injustices and insults in his presence? Why he did not chastise the Kurus immediately? When Draupadi was insulted in the assembly by the Kurus, by their attempt to see her naked in the presence of all, the Lord protected Draupadi by supplying an unlimited length of cloth, but he did not chastise the insulting parties immediately. Why? The silence of the Lord did not mean that he excused the offenses of the Kurus. There were many other kings on earth who had become very proud by three kinds of possessions. So this is the three kinds of false ego: wealth, education, and followers. Very similar to Queen Kunti's list: Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Shri. She gives four: good birth, opulence or wealth, beauty, high learning. Here it's wealth, education, and followers, three kinds of possessions. There were many other kings besides the Kurus who had become very proud of three kinds of possessions: wealth, education, and followers. And they were constantly agitating the earth by movements of military strength. The Lord was just waiting to get them together on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and kill them all at one time, just to make a shortcut in his killing mission. Godless kings or heads of state, when puffed up by advancement of material wealth, education, and increase of population, always make a show of military strength and give trouble to the innocent. When Lord Krishna was personally present, there were many such kings all over the world, and thus he arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra. Then Prabhupada gives a paraphrased rendering of Bhagavad Gita, the universal form, chapter 11, texts 32 to 34. In his manifestation of Vishwarup, the Lord expressed his mission of killing as follows, quote, "I have willingly descended on the earth in my capacity of inexorable time in order to decrease the unwanted population. I shall finish all those who have assembled here, except you, the Pandavas. This killing does not wait for you to take part in it. It is already arranged. All will be killed by me. If you want to become famous as a hero of the battlefield and thus enjoy the booty of war, then, O Savyasachi, just become the immediate cause of this killing and thus take the credit. I have already killed all the great warriors, Bhishma, Drona, Jayadrath, Karna, and many other great generals. Do not worry. Fight the battle and be famous as a great hero," unquote. So it's not a literal translation. It's a summary of the message Krishna is presenting in the 11th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. The Lord always wants to see his devotees as the hero of some episode which he himself performs. He wants to see his devotee and friend, Arjuna, as the hero of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And thus, he waited for all the miscreants of the world to assemble. That, and nothing else, is the explanation of his waiting. So two parts, there's what Krishna did and why, and then the second part is what we can learn from that for our own devotional service. When Krishna makes a promise, he keeps his promise. Krishna promised the demigods he would annihilate the miscreants, and he promises in Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna keeps his promise. But it may not be immediate. Prabhupada's language is he may be making a shortcut for his killing business. People ask this question sometimes the other way around. Why is it that good people, I know some good people, and those good people, they're suffering. They're struggling and undergoing hardship, and calamity comes, but they're good people. And others I know, they're bad people. They do bad things again and again, and to me, it looks like they're enjoying and they're prospering and they don't have the same kind of problems. It seems injustice in this world. People ask that. Krishna's not on somebody's clock where, you know, they think he should do something now and he doesn't do it now, and therefore Krishna made a mistake. He has his own plan. There's justice in the universe. There's no justice in the material world. We're trying to establish a justice system within ISKCON. This came up at our GBC meeting. And the person who had worked on it, Brajavihari, had consulted with a number of professionals that he has studied with and studied under and does, you know, collaborates with. And in short, their statement is there's no such thing as a fair justice system in the world. It doesn't exist. Take this model, that model. There's no... So that we decided we better give it a different name than a justice system, because bringing justice is very, it's very difficult. We're imperfect beings. Our resources are limited. We don't have great depth of wisdom. We can do the best we can. So anyway, from Krishna's side, he's not imperfect like us. So there's perfect justice in the universe. I'm being asked when I go back to America to speak about one of these things that's topical in people's minds that happens every time there's a big calamity. Like when the tsunami came, there was a big, you know, why do people have to suffer? So now it's Haiti. Why do we, and there's so many, Okay, you mean to say all those people? What about all the rest of the people of the world? Are they not equally sinful? Why are they not suffering? There's injustice in the universe. You've heard these kinds of things, I'm sure. The clock is ticking, and those who have acted impiously, they'll suffer. And those that have acted piously, although they may be in a difficult situation for the moment, their piety will be in part measured by their tolerance of difficult situation, so that they'll not be taking shelter of the temporary and move more towards the eternal. Whoever is in an opulent position in this world, Scripture tells us this is the fruit of their past piety. And if somebody has some piety, and on the strength of piety they have some good fortune, they can properly use it or misuse it. Supposing you go to a public assembly and say, everyone who is in the audience, we're going to give you a gift on your way home. We're going to give you $1 million. I don't know what that is in rupees, but it's a lot of rupees. What is it? Some big number. So, everybody walks home with $1 million. There's some merit. Now, how are they going to use that? Kriti can become Sukriti or Duskriti. Depends on how you use it. Right? Here's your $1 million. Some people can use it for bad purposes. Some people can use it for good purposes. They've done studies for people who have won lottery or some kind of like big award, a gambling thing. They get a lot. They get millions of dollars. Studies have shown those people, their lives become completely destroyed because they don't know how to handle all that opulence. So they use it for bad things. They destroy their lives. All the people who were their friends just now want something from them. They don't have any friends. It's a bad joke. Please don't win the lottery. Please don't even participate, for starters. If something bad happens, it's because there's a cause behind it. If something good happens, there's a cause behind it. But those people that are impious, that are moving along as if they're enjoying, what is it? They're very rapidly depleting their punya account. And when the account is empty, they're kicked out of that so-called enjoying position, and they become total sufferers. Those who have been enjoying for some time and then no longer have that facility for enjoyment, they suffer greatly. Prabhupada told the story of one man he knew. In his household days, something had happened in his life and he was taken to court. And the decision of the judge was that he had to pay a huge sum of money. Practically speaking, his whole wealth was taken away by a court decision. He said the man died in 1 year because he couldn't even think of living without that wealth. His spirit to live was gone, and he died in a year because he lost his wealth. Having opulence doesn't mean enjoyment, and having the absence of opulence or even some difficulty doesn't mean suffering. It's how one regards that situation. And what about from Krishna's side? When Krishna sees, specifically mentioned here, when he saw the Kurus, what a disgraceful thing they did to Draupadi. And not only no one in the assembly didn't do anything about it, even Krishna didn't do anything about it, other than supplying sari. Those people should have been smashed. Why didn't he? Answer, he did. It happened later, just for convenience, to bring all those people together along with the other demoniac kings. Finished. So Krishna isn't obliged to follow our logic. He's independent. And he keeps his word, although he's independent. He doesn't have to. He does, because that's his quality. And it's invincible. The force of time is invincible. So here Prabhupada has paraphrased what that force of time is. I have willingly descended on earth in my capacity of inexorable time in order to decrease the unwanted population. I shall finish all those who have assembled here except you, the Pandavas. So then, that's Krishna's plan, but there's a time delay, but that's fine. He's time. On his time, things happen. And then he invites us to be instruments of his plan. He's inviting Arjuna. He's inviting us. Become instrumental causes. What's the word? Just become an immediate cause of this killing and thus take the credit. But the credit goes to Krishna, and someone who is the instrument or the immediate cause takes the credit. What prevents people from doing that? It's their false ego. And the summary of what that false ego, how it manifests itself, is pride. Pride in mine, my possessions, my wealth, my education, my followers. These three are mentioned specifically. So the kings, the demoniac kings at the time when Krishna was present, they had great wealth. They had great military power. They had a huge population that were ready to follow them. They were knowledgeable in the Vedic wisdom. Yes? Read the section in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam where Hiranyakashipu was imparting transcendental knowledge to his relatives. Wow, he was very learned. So what was wrong? He was against Vishnu. I will kill Vishnu. So what's the use of his learning? It's not learning, it's ignorance. So someone is proud of their learning, their capacity to learn things, but they miss the mark of the purpose to which that learnedness is to be applied. They're fools, rascals, cheaters. How can you say that? Krishna says that. We can say it because Krishna says that. It's true. It's true. So what about, how do we apply this to us? Well, if we're doing, just like Bhishma Dev instructs in the ninth chapter of the first canto, if we're living by theistic conduct, principles of theism, religious action, we're guided in those activities by qualified brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and the purpose for which we're doing those two things is to satisfy Krishna, then we don't have anything to worry about. Worry about those three things. Don't worry about the outcome, how everything unfolds. Because how everything unfolds, one can't understand the plan of Krishna. But he's, one thing for sure is he's not obliged to us that it has to be the way that we think it should fall, you know, unravel or play itself out. Krishna's not obliged. He's completely free. And his method is, his how things will happen is better than our idea of how things will happen, whatever that is. And Krishna's the master of all living entities. We're only the master of our shoelaces. The scope of our capacity is tiny. We don't understand all the factors that Krishna has to account for. All the desires and karma, and it's very complicated. So Krishna, we just follow how Krishna wants things. And do our best to serve him in a proper way. So if there's a delay in how we understand what is the proper way, you know, if there's some injustice, you know, Krishna isn't obliged to come and like immediately stop that injustice. It goes on in the world. Some people become atheists because they see some anomaly of justice in the world. Why did God let this happen? And they become faithless. Largely it's because something that's an object of sense gratification is taken from them. Maybe a relative, maybe their wealth, maybe their home, maybe something that they see as security or enjoyment, and it's gone. The message is, this is all temporary, but instead of getting the message, they become angry at God. That's the faithless. But for the devotee, if the message is, this is all temporary, don't take shelter there. Now where should I take shelter? If I'm an atheist, I don't see where the other shelter is. But if you're a theist, you know exactly where the other shelter is. Long ago I heard this description, and I can't remember which sadhu it was. Maybe some of you have heard this story and will remember which sadhu it was, but there was some sadhu who was contemplating taking the step of renunciation or becoming a sannyasi. But his doubt was, there are others who are dependent upon me. I can't remember if it was his wife or his mother or something. So while he was deep in contemplation, he saw a little lizard that had just hatched out of, the lizards hatch from eggs. So it was a little lizard egg, and the little lizard came out of the lizard egg. And as soon as he like opened his eyes, there was a little fly, little insect, and his tongue went out. And with that, he got up and left. He took sannyas. Because his realization was, the Lord has made an arrangement for everyone, even a little baby lizard just coming out of the egg, for his protection and maintenance and well-being. So I'm not the protector. The Lord is the protector. Being sure of the fact that the Lord is the protector. He accepted that position both for himself and whoever were the persons he was contemplating. So this is Vidura. Vidura is understanding the Lord is the supreme protector and benefactor of all. What's the verse? Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. Do you know that one? Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatva Mam Shantim Ritshati. Krishna is the well-wishing friend of every living entity. He is the master of all that exists. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. One who understands this can live their life very peacefully. So this is Vidura. And he's indicating persons that don't know the purpose of the Lord, they're in anxiety, they're bewildered, they're disturbed. Whether it's, you know, a religious person or an irreligious person. A religious person may not be so detached. Their purpose of their religiousness or their religiosity may be for prosperity and being well situated. And when something doesn't go well for them, oh, what happened? But Vidura is very clear, and we should also. And similarly, when we see some injustice in the world, it's not that, okay, we're instruments of Krishna, we're going to go like deal with this injustice right now. Maybe. And maybe a particular time is not so appropriate. Maybe another time is more appropriate. We're not imitating Krishna, but following Krishna's example, there are proper times for something to be done if we have to address a circumstance because it's our service to do so. But overall, what we can do as servants of Krishna to address anomalies of the world that are bringing disturbance to the world is our positively taking part in the Sankirtan Yajna, the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That can change the configuration of injustice in the world by spiritual influence. And the more we can sincerely and vigorously, enthusiastically take part the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with pure hearts, the world can change. We may not be so powerful, but Krishna is very powerful. He's all powerful. And persons we come in contact and beyond the persons we come in contact with can become moved, transformed by Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. That's the faith of a follower of Lord Chaitanya. So by becoming pure representatives of the message and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can make positive effect on the anomalies of the world. That is to become our faith. It's a fact. Just by the presence of such persons walking on the surface of the earth, great benefit will come to the rest of the population. What to speak of if numbers of persons come together and engage in that activity with the right purpose. Pure devotional service rendered to please Krishna. That's our objective. Okay? So, and there and see if you have... some comments or questions? Yes. I'm right here. Sounds like a motorbike that needs to go to the shop. Go ahead. Yes. Absolutely everything. Krishna. I need guidance. Someone who's less influenced by the modes of nature than myself, let me repose my faith and confidence in them and take guidance and direction from them and do that. Although there may be pulling because of the modes, I place my faith and trust in those that are not. And they can guide me in the matter of proper behavior, proper vision. And over time, let me follow that process or means by which the influence of the modes of nature upon me will become diminished. Tadara jastamo bhava kama lobhada yascha e cheta etarna vidim stitvam satve prasidati. Let me engage in the process of Shrinvata Swakata Krishna. Punya Shravana Kirtana. Let me follow that. And as I'm following that, I want to receive guidance from those that are advanced in that in spiritual path. And simply accept. Thoughtfully, I mean not blindly, but thoughtfully accept. That should be our consciousness. Yes. Not to say levels, categories. How to get rid of pride. What is pride resting upon? What's the foundation of pride? A bodily conception. It's ignorance. So address the bodily conception. And our medicine to address the bodily conception is Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the submission unto Krishna, the process of surrendering unto Krishna by hearing and chanting. It if pride is very strong, then it's like, you know, taking a hammer and a chisel and it just keeps bouncing. Doesn't enter. Keep trying. And call upon Krishna's mercy. The process of devotional service is stronger than anything material. If pride is one thing, but there may be some other things. If there's something that doesn't go away, even after repeated efforts, it means it's very deeply ingrained. So we don't give up. We continue with that process with faith and confidence in the process. And it's a little bit like the message of this morning's verse. In Krishna's time, not according to our time, but in Krishna's time, he'll remove that. So just with faith, continue. So the opposing force is not just, you know, this is a stubborn tendency, it's we hold on to it. We hold on to certain of our contaminations. We don't know what life would be like without them. We want and we don't want at the same time. We're sincere and we're attached at the same time. So it takes time. It's a gradual process. It can happen at once, but it's a gradual process because we're attached. Now, Yovana? Something? No. Anyone? Okay. Thank you very much.